Well, thank you, Linda. You know, it always amazes me when we do this together and Linda's down there looking for resources and I'm up here writing a sermon. And that last reading was so right on for what I have experienced and what I'm going to talk about this morning. So thanks again, Linda, for that. The photo you see on the screen right now is a photo of Snug Harbor in Bowen Island. Bowen's a small island just northwest of Vancouver, BC. So what happened was in August, my daughter and I traveled to Edmonton to visit with family, one of whom was Lana Gilday, my nephew's wife, and her parents live on Bowen Island, and they have a six-year-old Wheaton Doodle. Do you want to move to the Wheaton Doodle? That is Bella. Bella on Georgia Strait in a hike that we took. So anyway, I hear from Lana that her parents are needing someone to look after this poodle, and I don't know that I'm about to move, and I'm about to get a cat, and I say, oh, I might be interested in that. And so the die was set. Well, then I decided I was going to move, and I did sell my house, and I did move, and that was a big deal. And then I got this cat, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, what am I going to do with Sophie when I go to Bowen Island? And Sophie is a nine-year-old cat who's had a history. I don't know all of the history, but part of it was she was in Texas, and then she moved to Mount Vernon, actually. And the next thing, she ended up at my place from the Whatcom Humane Society. And so I didn't want to unsettle Sophie, but I think really I was looking for excuses. I'm going to be 80 this year. What am I doing wandering around and looking after somebody's dog and taking all these walks in the forest and whatnot? Well, my daughter finally said, Mom, you know you're going to have a great time. Just go. Okay, well, you know, I have to think back to, I've had many moments of what I would call inspired recklessness. I don't know what that sounds like to you, but times when I just said I'm going to do something and it seemed stupid. How could I possibly think about something like that? And yet it turned into something quite wonderful. Well, this was one of those things. I had no expectations except that I was going to have to walk this dog and feed her. And the rest of it was just an open book. So I want to stop here and just say, as I'm talking about these things, I want to encourage you to think about what takeaways you get from it. I really got a lot out of these experiences. And the first one was an experience that I had years ago. I would call it a lucid dream, but it felt like it was a very inspired thing. I was walking in a dark hall. All the doors were closed on the way down the hall. And at the end of the hall, there was just a slight opening of a door and a brilliant light coming through it. I knew I was going there. I opened the door and there was this gorgeous little cottage garden. And in the middle of the garden stood about a 7-foot angel. I wasn't surprised. I just looked at the angel, and the angel lifted his wing and obviously was inviting me to stand in the lee of that, or the shelter of his wing. And it was a most profound moment of feeling loved and whole and connected. After a few moments, he indicated the gate on the other side of the garden, and we walked together to that gate. I opened the gate, and there was a narrow little path, kind of like a scene from Little House on the Prairie, just wide open meadows and tall grass, but this narrow little path. And I looked at him and I said, do I go first? Do you go first? Do we walk side by side? And he just said, put your foot on the path. I will always be with you. It's the only time he spoke. Well, it was, the lesson there for me was, you can't see where you're going next, but you're called to put your foot on the path. It's a profound lesson. I think we all need to learn in our lives. So here I was on Bowen Island, and it was right after that big snow we had. That was another excuse. Should I go? It's snowing. But anyway, I got there, took the ferry over, and schlepped a cooler and a bunch of bags of groceries and clothing down 65 steps to the condo in a co-housing environment that I was with. Just absolutely stunning environment. And Bella was not too happy to see me. We hadn't been introduced, and the first night was a little tentative, but nevertheless, next morning we got up and we went for the first of what was an average of 4.2 miles of walking every day. And I got home, and I got, you can change the photo, George. I got a text from my dear friend Dave, who had told me a couple of weeks ago that his wife, Rena, was in the final stages of Alzheimer's. Sorry, I'm getting a little teary. Rena was my best friend in my life, and I was devastated, even though I knew it was coming. And the next 2 days, basically, I cried and napped and ate and walked Bella, and that was about it. But after a couple of days, I began reaching out. My host had given me a couple of names, and I invited Rose over for tea, and Marianne and Steve invited me down there, and Jennifer invited me for a walk, and things just started to move. My host had suggested that I go for a walk with Skywalkers. That's Seniors Keeping Young. We can move the photo, George. And we went for a lovely walk, met a group of about 8 seniors, and one of them said to me, "Are you related to Len Gilday?" And I went, "Len Gilday? Who's that?" Well, I went down to the library and got his number, and I called him right away. And Saturday morning, there I was sitting in his living room with Len, drinking coffee and sharing family stories. And Len was a family member I didn't know I had. So the story between us is that our great-great-great-grandfathers lived in Montreal, and they had a feud. And my great-grandfather moved to Toronto, and Len's stayed in Montreal. So our family lines were broken at that point. And Len and I just had such a good time together. He's a retired cinematographer, about the same age. And he told me about David Gilday, whom I had met at a wedding when I was in my 20s, who sadly died 2 years earlier. We connected some of the family history together. And he had met my sister-in-law up in Yellowknife when he was up there doing research for a documentary, and had interviewed her for that documentary. Len has since said he would be happy to connect with my nephew, who is moving to Vancouver to study film. So really interesting how families can fight, they can go apart, and then something can bring them together, and who knows where the future will take them. It was a lovely experience. And 2 days later, I get a text from Len saying, "My wife is back from her trip to Costa Rica, and we'd like you to come over for dinner." And we had a wonderful 4-hour conversation that evening. It was just delightful. So I had 2 family members I did know about that I intended to contact. And the first one was Andrew. Andrew Gilday is an RCMP officer living in North Vancouver. He is the son of my first cousin, who died in November. And this is part of our family line that has very strong alcoholic tendencies. Andrew himself told me how much he drinks, and I was shocked. And I said, "That sounds like a lot, Andrew." And he said, "Well, I'm a big guy. I'm 250 pounds. However, he is aware that his children are watching him and that he's an example for them. And he must be aware of the potential effects his father, who became a pretty, well, at least the last half of his life, long alcoholic. So I'm hoping that Andrew and his wife, Natalie, and their two children, and I, and some of the other family members on the West Coast, will be able to get together and support each other, and maybe he will be able to follow his desire to cut back on his drinking and maybe stop altogether. So the next person I called was, and Andrew came out for the day, by the way, and spent the afternoon hiking with me on the coast. It was lovely. This is a picture of my younger cousin, Barb Fitzgerald. Barb is a retiring pediatrician in Vancouver. And we could not recollect a time when we had ever seen each other. Probably we did when we were very small, but there's no recollection there. But this was a real heart connection. Barb and I talked for 3 hours, talked about family, talked about things that we love, and we have a lot of common interests. And I think what's more important, we have a real heart connection and sensibility and feeling for each other. She has broken with her sister who lives on Salt Spring Island, which is not far from Vancouver. And I think the relationships with the other four siblings back on the East Coast are a little strained over decisions that were made by that part of the family for their father when he was in dementia and being put in a nursing home. And Barb felt that some poor decisions were taken at that time. So with Barb not speaking to her sister and this new realization of this connection of Gildays on the West Coast, we've talked about maybe having a bit of a reunion. And I wonder how the line from Montreal to Toronto will close again, and the family members in Barb's family will be able to come together again, and young Andrew may be supported in his decisions with his life and his drinking. You know, families have problems. Families get messy. There are broken ties. But I think back to when my brother and I got together when my father was dying, and I was there for 3 months, and David was coming for 2 weeks, and we've never been close. As children, we're jealous of each other. I was a bossy older sister. It just didn't go well. But I wrote him a letter of reconciliation. And, you know, we're grown-ups now. And I see on Facebook that we have a lot of similar interests. And maybe things can be different. And, in fact, they were different when we came together. It took a few days for us to shift gears. But David and I are close now, and I hope the same will be true of the rest of these people. So I want to talk about trees and forests and beautiful landscapes, and George is going to run through a series of pictures that I took when I was out hiking every day with Bella. As I said, I did 4.2 miles a day. And the first day, the day where you see all this water running down the mountainside, was quite a steep mountain. And I had gotten lost looking for a lake trail, ended up in this very wet, muddy, rainy, and it was raining while I was there, forest walk. And I think we walked 6.7 miles that day. It was pretty crazy. As I was walking, I was thinking about when I was in my 20s, and I met this, I was walking in the, hiking in the Lake Louise area in the Rocky Mountains, and I met this elderly German woman. She was 80 years old. And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's so fantastic. She's 80 and she's still hiking. And as I was doing this hike up this steep mountain, suddenly it hit me. I'm that woman now. I'm going to be 80 years old this year, and I'm doing all this crazy hiking, wonderful hiking. And then I thought, you know, it didn't feel right to just kind of boast that I'm able to do this right now. I thought of a Buddhist story that I had heard of, where the teacher was carrying around this lovely goblet all the time, and his students talked to him and said, Master, you tell us that we should not be attached to things, but I see that you carry this mug with you all the time, and it seems that you're attached to that mug. And the teacher said to them, I treasure this mug because it was given to me by one of my beloved students, and I carry it with me and enjoy it every day, knowing that one day I will drop it and it will break and I will no longer have it. Well, I have osteoporosis. In June, I fell and I broke my back. It's healing, not nearly as well as I would like it to or as fast as I would like it to. I wear a brace now for the foreseeable future. I don't know for how long. But I treasure what I am able to do now. I've left my big garden, sold my house because of my back, but I treasure the fact that I can get out and do these walks and the fact that I do have green around me and that I can do a little bit of gardening, but not a lot of gardening. So that's a lesson in appreciating what we have now. And as George continues to scroll through these beautiful sites on Bowen Island, I want to tell you that there were disasters going on at home. The person that I had gotten to cat sit for me ran into my garage door, caused considerable damage. And that's okay, you don't need to hurry, George. That eventually had to be replaced to the tune of $2,000. And I won't go into her insurance, my insurance, paying for it on our own. But it was an interesting time of an ethical dilemma. She's a friend. The reason that she went into the garage door was because she had to get out of the car and go around and manually trigger the wall release for the garage door because garage door opener wasn't working and I hadn't had time to fix it before I left. So I felt some responsibility there. I'm feeling responsibility. It wasn't my fault that she ran into it. She's taking full responsibility. Still, I feel that I should bear part of the cost of the replacement of the door. And that was an interesting ethical exercise for me. And in the end, I did pay for part of it. And she said, I feel it's enough to help me in the cost, and it's not too much, so I feel I need to refuse it. So it just, that struggle seemed to strike the right balance. A good exercise. In the meantime, she had told me that she could do the first 10 days and the last 10 days of my visit, and I needed to get someone in the middle. That happened after the initial arrangement. So I got a neighbor here to do the second part. Well, after 3 days, she found that she was allergic to Sophie, so I had to find a fourth person to fill in. And when Anna came back, it turned out that Sophie had pooped and peed all over my bed. Obviously, she hadn't been able to tolerate all the change. And I thought, maybe I'm going to have to rehome her because she needs a stable environment, maybe an older person who's just sitting watching TV or reading all day. Someone who's not going to be taking off and going places. Well, then I got to thinking, you probably have next door down in Mount Vernon, I'm going to put this in next door and see if anybody has any good ideas. And I put a picture of her up there in my conundrum of not wanting to upset her, her needing the stable environment. And who pops up but a woman who loves cats, can't have one now because they travel. Can she come over and just hang out with my cat and feed her and clean out her box when I need to go away for the weekend or whatever? And I've met her, and I think that's going to work out just fine. Just fascinating how, you know, a problem can become an opportunity, and how I don't have all the answers. None of us has all the answers. And sometimes putting the question out there brings up something much more interesting. So those problems turned into opportunities. And now, George, if you can move on to, and this picture, go back that one. This is a picture of Opa. Opa is over 1,000 years old, Douglas fir, who is in a retreat center on Bowen Island. And the next picture, the next picture is Ellen, who took me to this retreat center, and the labyrinth that you see behind it. And George, are we going to be able to see that video, part of it? No, don't worry about it. No problem. So my host texted me and said, you need to meet Ellen. And this is like 3 days before I left home, or left Bowen. So I kind of dutifully met Ellen, not realizing what was going to come of this. Ellen wanted to show me a video, and I didn't realize that the video that she was going to show me is a documentary called The Village of Widows, which is about the village where my sister-in-law, Cindy Gilday, grew up. It's a story of the uranium mine that was next to the village, the men of the village who looked after, who carried in cloth bags this uranium to the stockpiles and loaded it onto the planes and carried the tilings to the place where they polluted the local land. These men had no idea, the people of the village had no idea what was being mined. One of them said, we thought it was gold. Anyway, almost all of those men in the village have died of cancer since then, over the years, and some of the young children as well. Cindy has not. Cindy is starting to get dementia now, which could happen to any of us. It's hard to say if it's related to the uranium mine. Her father died. Cindy and her cousin, George Blondin, and several other elders of the village who did survive, chose to go to Hiroshima on the anniversary of the dropping of the bomb. They contacted Ottawa, got the trip covered, and went over, and it was a trip of reconciliation with people that they met there. A very powerful and moving documentary, and I recommend it to you if any of you are interested. It's on YouTube, so it's free. And it's called The Village of Widows. Very moving. And you'll see my sister-in-law, Cindy, there. The next day, Ellen picked me up, or I picked her up, and we went up to see this wonderful tree and walk the labyrinth and see the retreat center. And Ellen told me about her history as a Japanese ancestor. Some of her ancestors were actually within the bomb perimeters and survived to tell the story. And Ellen says she feels that trauma and feels the connection with them and all of what they experienced in her. And so it's moved her to be an advocate for peace and justice and sustainability in the world. Ellen has written several books. Her name is Ellen Hayakawa, if any of you are interested in looking her up. H-A, YAKAWA. And of all the various things that she's done, the one that was most memorable to me was pulling together a conference on peace and justice in Vancouver, British Columbia, that brought 4,000 people from around the world of all races and ethnicities and levels of government and ordinary people and you name it, all in the name of peace and justice. Really marvelous, amazing person. And we too had another heart connection. So I had a bunch of takeaways from this, and you may have some takeaways too, but I'll tell you first what my takeaways were. When the invitation comes, you can leave that one up, George. When the invitation comes, you don't have to know the whole way. You just need to put your foot on the path, and gradually the way will be revealed. The people who need to come into it will come. The resources that need to happen will happen. There was a time when I was in Ghana and I was talking to the headmaster about the new library that they had just built that had no books. And he said, I said, "What are you going to do about books, headmaster?" And he said, "I lie awake at night wondering what I'm going to do about that, Barbara." So my mouth spoke before I did. That was putting my foot on the path. And it said, well, I think I could manage that. And I was able to raise $22,000 in the next, 9 months. Some of you may have contributed to that. That was probably 15 years ago. Second takeaway, don't miss the opportunities that come your way. Keep learning and growing. I may be turning 80, but that doesn't mean my life is stopping. I have so many more adventures to take, and each one of us does in our own ways. Challenge your excuses when they come up. I'm really good at finding excuses not to do something, but, you know, I'm grateful that my daughter said, "Mom, just go." Kind of shook me out of that mindset. Remember that this day, this moment, this is the only one we can be sure of. Don't squander it with mindless TV or entertainment or computer games. You know, think back to maybe the only big opportunity that I can think of that I've missed was not going to Korea. When our children were small and Robert was offered to move with the company over to Korea for just a year, but they couldn't promise him his job when he got back. So we decided in the name of security not to take the job. And instead, we moved with the company to Colorado Springs, which folded 3 months later. We were invited to go back to California, which I didn't want to do. So Robert was without a job for 18 months. I think that's a great irony that we moved for security and it turned out that that was the insecure choice. Another little serendipity that happened in the last couple of days. I got a text from Angie, who had been very kind and helped me with a computer problem when I was going to preach up on the North Shore Church. She said, "Mara would like a ride back to Bellingham and wonders if you would be willing to do that." Well, I had met Mara a couple of times, and she seemed kind of odd and aloof, and honestly, I didn't feel comfortable with her. But okay, I'm going to Bellingham. She's not well. I will give her a ride. So I did that. And as we talked, suddenly I said to her, "Did you used to be called Serena Davidson?" And she said, "Yes." And then I remembered our previous connection. She'd had cancer, so she lost a lot of weight, and she changed her name, so I didn't recognize her. But I had the feeling that she was trying to get me to be her good buddy. Talked about not having friends, and she was, the cancer had come back, and you know, my pastoral care side wanted to jump back in there. And I just said to myself, you weren't comfortable with her 20 years ago, and you're not comfortable with her now. This is not your job. So I set my boundaries. I just refused to take the bait. And Mara has gone on to Seattle to be with friends there, the friends that she doesn't have. Note. And it was a good decision. A good test for me for my boundaries. Another point, another takeaway, we are all connected. Oh my gosh. The grandfathers in Montreal, Len and I here, maybe Len and my nephew who's going into film. Mara and the past at Buff 20 years ago. Ellen and her connection with Cindy in this movie. She has a strong feeling for the people in this documentary that she showed me, and the strong feeling she has with her ancestors back in Japan, and how that has moved in the world in the work that she's done. And Len to my sister-in-law. Just all kinds of, how do these things happen? It's fascinating. Serendipities become the natural flow of our lives when we allow them, I think, when we take that intuitive step and put our foot on that path that doesn't seem to have a next step until it does. And joy, life is a balance of joys and sorrows. You know, the loss of Rena was huge for me. I went over to Victoria with Bella to meet with Dave, her husband, and her daughter Gina, and we planned her memorial service, which I will lead on March 17th. And all the joy that has come from this experience of being on Bowen Island, and the people that I met in the co-housing, and the people that I met by chance or not by chance, preaching at North Shore. I got this call on Wednesday, the second week I was there, saying, Barbara, I hear you're on Bowen Island. We're desperate. Could you come and preach next Sunday? And I actually was able to do that. So those are my takeaways. It was sheer joy. And then the reason these flowers are up here is because somebody said to me the other day, so when you heard that you got COVID this week, how did you feel when you got the test, positive test? And my response was, it's like this. And now I walk on this path. I put a photo of the positive test on Facebook and simply said, my turn. And I got so many well wishes, and people brought so many soups and brownies and cookies and salads and things. I've got enough food for the next week. I have sometimes felt as a Canadian, and I'm a dual citizen now, I've sometimes felt I don't belong. You know, there's so many little tiny things that people who have lived in this country all their lives would not notice. But I have felt like an outsider in those times, like people don't understand me because I do things a certain way, or, you know, kind of silly little things. And after this COVID response and all these people showing up, I realized I really am loved. I really am lovable. And what is it in me and the way that I act that is making me perceive that that might not be true? How can I figure that out and change that so that my experience and my awareness of that experience is integrated? It's been an amazing, magical month full of so many gifts of the spirit and of this world that we live in. And I just wanted to share that with you. Thank you.